You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Bob Chillin, a.k.a. Don't Be a Dick Barnett. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And this is episode 276. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Knicks walloping the Chicago Bulls 110-92 in Tank Fest 2K18. We will cover the following topics: the Bulls bringing great shame upon themselves, their city, the league, the world, and, dare I say, the entire known universe. Low lights, there were so many, we're going to cover a lot of them. 24-second violations, defensive 3 seconds, air balls, defensive lapses, and other assorted boners. We're going to talk about unexpectedly titillating incidents, many of them involving Kyle O'Quinn, and at least one of them involving Kyle O'Quinn's beard. We're going to have stray observations on Troy Williams, Bobby Portis, Michael Beasley, and much more. We've also got a bonus segment coming up. Something very cool is in the works. Adam Silver is being interviewed by David Locke, head of the Locked On Network. Adam Silver's interview with David Locke is going to air on Thursday on Locked On NBA. I think you guys will find it interesting. We've got a sneak peek of Adam Silver's interview with David Locke. We've got a clip of him talking about the idea of changing the start of games, changing the time that games start to accommodate a non-Western Hemisphere audience, let's say, namely Europe and Asia. It was an interesting little tidbit of the conversation. We're going to tease it. We're going to play that little clip. I'm going to share some thoughts on what he had to say. All right, that's it. Let's start the show. Hit him off.
Yes.
I want to start the show by saying that the Chicago Bulls should be deeply ashamed of themselves. Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, all of them have one thing in common. And that's that they did not travel with the team for Monday's game against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden. The Chicago Bulls went so far as to start something called a Paul Zipser on Monday night. Now, this is as blatant a tank move as they come. And yes, the Knicks have been trying to lose for weeks now. Some may say decades. But not like this. Oh no, not like this. As Omar Little once said, a man's gotta have a code. As Tupac once said, you may have made a G today, but you made it in a sleazy way. Partner! Rat-a-tat-tat-tat. That's just the way it is. The correct way to tank, Chicago, the correct way to tank, is to play lineups optimized for doo-doo but a stank, a.k.a. Moutier, Beasley, and Cantor all at once. That's how you tank like a man. You gotta shackle your best defensive players to the bench, a la Frank Ntilikina, but you gotta let them suit up. And you gotta put sleeping pills in your team's Gatorade so they come out of halftime and lay a giant egg in the third quarter, as the Knicks have done so many times. That is the way you tank. Shame on you. You're disgusting. You know, they may say that some of these players are battling injuries. They may say they're putting Chris Dunn in a boot tomorrow. But I say shame. Shame! Now, when people talk about something as shameful as what Chicago did, they bring up frequently the idea of punishing them. Should we punish this team for tanking? And the answer to that is an unequivocal, wait for it, no. No, we should not. That's the slipperiest slope ever. And it's way too subjective and way too open to interpretation. You can't punish teams for tanking. You can punish them for saying it out loud. Like, I get it, even though that's stupid too, but fine. You want them to shut up about it. But you can't punish them for different roster moves. You can't punish them for rotation moves. It's way too subjective. It's opening up a can of worms that you do not want to open. Keep those worms in that can. You know? Punishing teams with fines or, God forbid, a loss of a draft pick. It's too much power for the league to have. That's what I'm saying. You don't want to invest that power in them. Who's to say that Adam Silver won't be the commissioner one day and we'll have someone less stable than him, less of a genius than him, and then what happens? If you've given the office of the commissionership this power. There are some direct parallels in politics, which I'll leave you guys to connect the dots, but you can't do it. You can't do it. It's the same reason I'm against the death penalty. Do some people deserve to die? I don't know. Probably. Maybe. But states, and by states I mean like governmental states, countries, continents, municipalities, they should not be allowed to decide who lives and dies. In my opinion. You can disagree. And the league should not be allowed to punish people for tanking, certainly by stripping away draft picks. Fines? All right, you're talking my language a little bit more. Taking away draft picks? No, never. Too much power. Too devastating if wielded incorrectly. You can set a franchise back a decade if you screw them over like that. You could say you're screwing over yourself, but what is the hard and fast criteria? You can't come up with it. You can't say if XYZ happens because every situation is different. How do you really know? You're going to be second-guessing these guys' team doctors and shit. Like, it's way too messy, way too sloppy. Can never take away a draft pick for tanking. They created this mess, the NBA, by the way the draft is organized. And if they don't like it, they have to fix the way the draft is organized. You can't legislate against teams doing what's in their own best interest within the confines of the rules that you have set up. If you set up rules and then it makes sense for teams to tank, you can't fine them for doing it. You have to change the rules. Like, fine, you know, if you certainly can't take away a draft pick. Fining is more debatable, but you got to change the rules. That's the answer. Not punishing people according to your subjective criteria. I want to talk about lowlights. I want to talk about unexpectedly titillating incidents, UTIs. I want to share a highlight from Adam Silver's interview with you guys. That's all coming up. But first, just want to remind you that you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the whole goddamn world. Kiss my ass. This was billed as a, you know, just like a tank battle to end all tank battles, as one of the premier tank matchups of the season. There certainly was a lot at stake with the Knicks and the Bulls being so close in the tank standings. Just a half game separating them going into this one. And at least through the first half, and especially the first quarter, it lived up to that billing of just gross sloppiness. So I want to share some lowlights with you from this game, because there were quite a few. Moutier got sunned to death on two layups in the first quarter, getting them viciously blocked, both times falling to the ground, both times failing to draw a foul. After the second one, that grossness was compounded by the Knicks having the ball under their own basket, because Moutier was blocked, but it was out of bounds on the Bulls. Knicks had the ball under their own basket, and they got hit with a 5-second violation for failure to inbound the ball in a timely fashion. Another positive check mark in the column of Jeff Hornacek's coaching ledger. Isaiah Hicks got significant burn in this one. He airballed a jumper from the free throw line, wide open. So that was another low light. Although he did follow that shot up, that missed shot, that airballed shot, and got a layup. Someone, it like deflected off someone because you can't just shoot it and then catch it. That's called a travel. But someone like deflected it and he followed his shot. I'm sure it would have made Clyde proud. He always says, if Follow your shot, young man or young player. I forget exactly how he phrases it, but you know, you're a Knicks fan. You know what I'm talking about. There was a defensive 3-second violation on the Bulls in the first quarter. The first quarter was a 19-18 poop fest. The Knicks and the Bulls shot a combined 15 for 48 for a robust 31%. The Bulls had 3 shot clock violations, 24-second shot clock violations in this contest, 2 of them in the first half. Hardaway started the game 1 for 85 billion from 3. He actually got very hot at the end there, but he was part of the original stank that was emanating off this tank battle. Speaking of Hardaway, though, he wound up having a good game. Even when he was chucking air balls from downtown, laying bricks with the best of them, he was driving very well on this one. And then he caught fire, which is, I mean, if you're a high-usage guy, that's smart. You open up, gunning. You don't have it, take it to the rack. Get the feel. See the ball go through the hoop, down out the bottom of the net, into someone else's hands. I don't know why I extended that sequence as far as I did, but, you know, these things happen. So it was smart of him to drive, and then he found the touch. So good for you, Hardaway. Another decent game. And then Clyde hit him with the, he's percolating. So you know all is well when someone's percolating. Which always cracks me up, Clyde saying percolating, because percolation in my mind is gentle. I think of coffee. It's gently percolating, it's bubbling, it's pleasant, it's soothing. But you do you, Clyde, you know? And I'm not... Someone on iTunes said, like, you don't have respect for Clyde because he's not just a goofy old man. I know that. Are you kidding me? He's the greatest Knicks point guard of all time. Arguably the greatest Knicks player of all time. He's a living legend. I understand this. He was the one who dominated in Game 7 in 1970. I understand this. But now, in 2018, you know, in the realm in which most of my commentary takes place, I'm talking about things that are happening now, he is a silly old man on some level. Yes, he has a great past, which I cherish and honor and respect him for. But he says silly things, so I'm going to laugh at them from time to time. I respect my history. We're not done with lowlights yet. We've got 4 more lowlights, then we'll move on. Cantor, at one point, was in the game in the third quarter, gave up 11 straight points to the world beater, Cristiano Felicio. He's like, okay, but, whoo, that was stinky. Kyle O'Quinn came in and then sunned Cristiano Felicio a couple times in a row, blocked a shot, got a steal, shut him down. Get off me, shut him down. Can't hold me, shut him down, you know? 3 more lowlights. Nwaba megged Jaren Grant on a kickout. If you don't know what megging is, it's a soccer term that means when the ball goes between your legs. And the ball just went through. He drove Nwaba, kicked it out to Grant at the 3-point line. Grant was just like, what happened? And the ball went through his hands and under his legs and out of bounds. So that was nice and embarrassing. Another low light was Dotson getting his first burn in the fourth quarter. Why? Like, because you're not... I don't know. It's just dumb. If you're going to play someone, unless it's an emergency, like the Knicks were kicking ass all second half and they brought him in the fourth quarter because, like, finally it was in hand enough. It wasn't in hand enough. It was still like a 10-point lead with like 8 minutes left or whatever. I just don't understand why anyone would play for the first time in the fourth quarter unless it's under very rare circumstances. And Hornacek does this shit all the time. It drives me nuts. One last low light. Isaiah Hicks fouled out in 21 minutes. Clyde and, Kenny Albert were like, another good outing from Hicks because he had like 8 points and 9 rebounds or something like that. But he fell out in 21 minutes. You got a lot to work on, young man. Very bad defensive outing. So that was a low light for him. To counterbalance that negativity from the lowlights of the game, I want to share with you guys some unexpectedly titillating incidents, otherwise known as UTIs. We had 6 delightful UTIs in this one. Maybe more. I don't know. I don't know if I counted correctly just now. Frank shot 2 threes in the first quarter and made 1. Multiple 3-point shots from Frank before the first quarter is over. Love it. This was, I don't know if this was his first. I don't think it was his first. But a multiple 3-point game for Frank. 3-pointers made. And that's always nice to see. He shot 2 of 5 overall. So that was good. That's 40%. But he missed the last one at the end of the fourth quarter. the end of one of his patented 14-minute stretches that Horny is so fond of giving him. I think he played 16 minutes in a row to close the game, which is just so stupid, man. Are you trying to get all these guys' ankles broken? Like, he didn't play at all during the third quarter until there were 4 minutes left, which is actually fine. But then take him out for a little bit and then put him back in. Like, put it in two stints. Call timeout if you have to. There's dead balls. Like, you gotta vary these guys' minutes a little bit. I hate these 16-minute stretches. It's so stupid. This is actually may not be unexpected. We're still talking about UTIs. This may not be unexpected going further, because if he keeps it up, it's going to be just a regular thing. But speaking of Frank, he had a nice transition bucket off a rebound. Kyle Quinn got the rebound. He hit Frank, who was streaking up the court at around midcourt. Frank took it to the rack and finished the layup with the left hand through traffic. It was sneaky. It was snaky. It was tough. Gets my stamp of approval. Luke Kornet shot 4 threes in the second quarter. That's a lot, even for someone like Luke Kornet. He only made one, but they were basically all wide open. Jeff probably had a heart attack. He's like, take a step in, shoot it from mid-range. It's a lost art. But I didn't like the percentage, but I was titillated by the frequency of the three-point shot. Good open three-point shots in the second quarter for Luke Kornet. This technically counts as a UTI. The Knicks allowed, quote-unquote, a season-low 37 points in the first half. But this was a shell of an NBA team in Chicago, so I don't know how much credit you can give them for that. But, yeah, we're looking for bright spots. Let's give it to them, okay? Kyle Quinn is closing us out with two unexpectedly titillating incidents. He touched Clyde's suit in the intros and made Clyde laugh. And, you know, he did that kind of thing where you, like, rub the shoulders and he made a little, like, ooh, like, ah, so nice, like, ooh, face. And it made Clyde feel and express delight. He's got such a wonderful smile. It's a little known fact, every time Clyde smiles, there's a double rainbow in St. Croix over his estate. It's true. He affects the weather. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's part of his legend. The second Kyle Quinn UTI, he let a kid touch his beard at the end of a play. Like, they were basically like in the heat of battle. He kind of fell out of bounds, and some kid was like, "Can I touch your beard?" He's like, "Yeah." And he let him touch his beard. He smiled. He laughed. I really want Kyle Quinn on the team next year. He's a great. Am I about to say he's a great basketball player? He's a very good basketball player. He's a winning basketball player. That is for sure. He's a native New Yorker, and he's a delight, and I want him around. I want to close out talk of this game with some stray observations. It's been kind of like dancing on the tip of my tongue for a couple weeks now, but Troy Williams dunks like Latrell Sprewell. That's what it reminds me of. He's got this two-handed overhead tomahawk power slam that is very Sprewell-esque, and it delights me. I like it. Not his best game overall, though. This, like, loosey-goosey shit that happens when they're playing these tankathon matches is not the greatest environment for him. He needs to be, like, more structured and to feel that he doesn't have the freedom to try anything. He had a couple sloppy turnovers in this one, a couple of, like, wild twisting reverse layup attempts that were just a touch too ridiculous for me. I'm all for acrobatic and adjusting when you need to avoid the defense, but he was a little bit too far on the other side of that in this one. I'm not going to dwell too much on it. Just one game, but he had, a ferocious slam at one point. Like I said, his slam dunks remind me of Sprewell. He had some nice cuts. He had some aggressive defense, but not one of his better games. Kind of sloppy, a little bit all over the place. Another stray observation. Bobby Portis looks legitimately unhinged. And it's, I can, like, it makes me almost uncomfortable watching him, like, on TV. Because I can really picture him breaking Mirotic's face. Like, it's not a stretch at all. Sometimes you hear someone gets in a fight, and you're like, him, really? But, like, I look at Bobby Portis, I'm like, yeah. I'm surprised he doesn't try to fight, like, traffic lights when they turn red on him. He's got those crazy wide, like, open eyes that reminds me of someone trying to pretend they're not high by, like, opening their eyes super wide. Like, it looks like he's doing everything in his power. It looks like he has invisible metal hooks, like in a Clockwork Orange, holding open his eyelids. So, Bobby Portis, you creep me out. Beasley, you lovable rascal. Shooting really well again in this one. We're trying to tank, bud, but I can't stay mad at you. I can't stay mad at you. You were 6-10 from the field, 2-3 from three-point land. You got 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. 17 points, plus 19 in 23 minutes. Michael Beasley, I give you a tip of my hat. Tip of my hat. One last stray observation. That Kylo Quinn block that got called a flagrant, that was just a man's foul. He went after the ball. If you get bodied during that, oh well. But at the same time, in the new NBA, in the current NBA, that's what it is. I mean, if you go up aggressively and get body contact like that and send someone flying, you're going to get a flagrant whether or not your intention was to do it, whether or not you hit the ball first. Should that affect how you play? Yeah, I mean, situationally, it depends. I don't know. I don't mind Kyle O'Quinn kind of sending this guy a message by hard fouling him. Let him know what's up. He wasn't trying to hurt him, as far as I can tell. That guy was going... I forget who it was. Let me... I can get you his name. Well, Blakeney. Antonio Blakeney. He went up and he blocked Kyle O'Quinn aggressively before. He was trying to yam it on him really hard. You know, Kyle O'Quinn let him know what was up. Yeah, hit with a flagrant. I don't mind it. It wasn't malicious. All right, we got something cool coming up for you guys. Adam Silver... talking about adjusting game times for a non-North American audience. First, just want to remind you that you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The reason we're able to get you such interesting content as Adam Silver interviews is because this is the number one daily sports podcast network in the world. Locked On Knicks, Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, this is cool. Here's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to play a clip of Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, addressing the question of whether NBA games will ever change their start time to cater to a non-US audience. Here's Adam Silver talking with David Locke.
So everyone's watching on their cell phones. You said it a moment ago, 25% of players are international. We'll tip off here in Salt Lake at 7 o'clock tonight. If a Rudy Gobert fan wants to see him, it's 2 a.m. If the Milwaukee Bucks are tipping off at 7 and a Giannis fan wants to see him, I think it's 3 a.m. When do we start tipping off at 11 a.m. so that the fan in Paris can see a 7 o'clock game?
Well, by the way, remember at the same time, it's prime time commute time in China. You know, it's the morning there. I would have never said that when I first got in the league 26 years ago. And these time zones are certainly not convenient for Europe, but we have a huge audience in Asia which watches these games in the morning when they get up or when they're commuting to work. In terms of Europe, though, I don't want to be too glib about that because it's a real issue. And in the old days, certainly when I first got involved in the league, and as you know, I ran NBA Entertainment years ago, the vast majority of fans in Europe, there wasn't a real internet, and they would watch games in primetime the following night. So we had a bigger audience in primetime than we do today because that world's over. You can't turn the clock back. Nobody's going to watch a game that happened 18 hours before. One of the things we potentially could do for our European fans, and this is something we're thinking about in the league office, is maybe teams once a month will play in the afternoon. You know, and if we have enough teams in the league where you could put together a schedule so there would always be somebody playing in prime time or at least multiple nights a week. We do that on the weekends now, for example. We have an afternoon package. You know, across the league, there's always someone playing in the afternoon. We can schedule it that way so there can at least be a prime time game. But, you know, in terms of if you're a fan of a particular team, we clearly can't, you know, we're a long ways away, you know, or I don't even foresee a day where we wouldn't, in essence, be playing in primetime in the United States. But it's the other side of the coin of having a product that people want to watch live is that you could lose a lot of sleep being a Rudy Gobert fan.
I thought there were a couple of interesting tidbits there before he got to his main answer. One was that Asia has, you know, the NBA has massive popularity in Asia in part because they watch the games live in the morning over there. I never really thought about that, but, you know, obviously Asia is a huge continent. There's a couple of time zones, but look at, like, Hong Kong. It's 12 hours ahead, so 7 p.m. here, 7:30 here, is 7 a.m. there, 7:30 a.m. there. I hadn't thought of that. You know, it's that's got to still suck, watching games first thing in the morning, but at least it's live. You know, it's like when you're awake. And there's something that's kind of like illicitly fun about trying to follow games when you're not supposed to, i.e. at work. It's the allure of the taboo. It's powerful. People want things they're not supposed to have. It's why you should let your kids drink a glass of wine with you at dinner when they're pretty young. I don't know, like 12, 13, I don't know what's a good age. Like a glass, that's it. If you forbid them from ever smelling it, they're going to become binge drinkers, doing Jaeger bombs before class in the morning in junior high. Let them in. The taboo is strong. So what I'm trying to say is I can see that allure of, like, the games are on in the morning. I can't necessarily watch the whole thing, but I can try to sneak peeks. It's kind of fun, right? Another thing of note in Adam Silver's commentary, the internet has decreased primetime viewership in Europe because people don't want to watch replays, at least like en masse, which makes perfect sense. You know, they would rather watch it when it's live. I'm deep in this thing. I like watching games after they take place if I can't catch them. But having that happen occasionally is very different from being the only way you can follow the game. You know, there's still going to be fans over there, obviously, but that's going to absolutely keep a casual fan away. A lot of times people just like it for the camaraderie anyway. And if, like, people aren't into it and, you know, they're not on a time when people can watch it and the internet spoils everything so you know what happens before you're able to watch the game, it loses its fun. Now let's get to the meat of the answer. Adam Silver suggested that maybe they could have NBA teams play one afternoon game, like, during the week a month. I could live with that. It would be annoying, but it would also be kind of fun. Like I said, you try to, like, play hooky from work, watch it at a bar. Baseball has a lot more games, but they do have day games. It's not, like, unprecedented for a day game to take place during the week in a professional sporting league in the United States. So that's fine. As long as you don't go farther than that. And Adam Silver answered well here, I thought. He said in a very lawyerly way, he doesn't foresee a day when games aren't played in prime time in the U.S., which is just, yes, obviously, this is correct. These teams need to be supported by their local markets first and foremost, or the whole thing is dumb. You can't take that away from the municipality that has had this joy/burden foisted upon them of hosting a professional basketball team. You gotta play the games when the home crowd can watch it, obviously. So, good job there, Adam Silver. You have my seal of approval on that answer. That's it for us for today. Thank you guys very much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Tell your friends about it. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnKnicks. You can follow me at NBA Injury Report. That account's mostly jokes. I think you'll like it. Be chill to each other. Have a good rest of your day. Or if you're listening to this thousands of years ago, after the singularity took place, I want to let you know that there was a time when human beings were flesh and blood and we loved each other. We loved each other. All right, have a good one, guys. Peace!